Hi, everyone. This is Liam Deckel with the Student Screenwriting Podcast. Today, we're here with Yaron Zilberman, the writer, director, and producer of a number of feature films, documentaries, and TV shows, including Watermarks, A Late Quartet, Incitement, and most recently, Valley of Tears, which is streaming on HBO Max. Hi, Yaron. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Liam.
No problem. So let's dive right in. At what age did you get into writing and film, and what made you do so?
Oh, wow. I started relatively late at the age of 35 years old. And what happened was that, you know, I was doing so many things before that until a friend of mine asked me to join him on a documentary project just to help as a, actually from more, I would call it from the business side, to, you know, sort of create a business plan for that and help him with getting it started. And while I was working on that project, it was about the greatest soccer players of all time, a documentary. And so I asked the director of that project to buy books for him as research for the history of soccer to learn more. And on one of the, there were two books that were considered way back, like the most important about the soccer history. Today, there are probably hundreds. So one of the two opened and started with a Jewish soccer team that was incredible during the 1930s. And they actually won the first team ever, Hapoach Vienna, a Viennese team, that won against West Ham United 5-0 on England soil, which was the first team to win any British team outside of coming out of Britain. So I was very excited by that. And I started to study research about this team, Hapoach Vienna. And what I learned was that, you know, it was a striking story. And I started to meet all the members from that club that were alive, of course. And then I realized that the true story was not soccer, but basically swimming, and not just swimming, the women swimmers that were fantastic swimmers, but also had amazing, incredible personalities. And that really interested me. And I started to embark on making my own first documentary that is called Watermarks. And that's how it started. You know, the first day that I filmed, I knew that what mm-hmm. I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
Yeah, so let's go back a bit. So I see that you studied physics and operations research at MIT. You also worked as a mathematician in Wall Street, and you're involved in startups. Now, do you think this helped you start your film career, like networking? And do you think if you studied screenwriting, it would have helped you more?
Wow, these are two questions. I'll start with the first one. So what basically brought me, it wasn't networking so much because I didn't have any network. However, I had a friend, a close friend, Jonathan Israel, who studied film at the time. And I told him about the story. And he actually, you know, the story about the soccer, the story about the swimmers, and he really got excited about the swimmers and said, let's do this, because he was, finishing his studies at NYU. And, oh, sorry, not at NYU. My wife studied at NYU film. He studied, I think, at the School of Visual Arts. And he got excited by that. And he said, I have a friend in France, a producer, a documentary producer, one of the leading documentary producers in France. And let's introduce him, you know, to the project, introduce him via, you know, phone call. So he called him and he told him about it. And he said, come over to Paris and let's talk about it. And in a few days, we were in Paris pitching the project for 3 days, talking about it. And at the end of the 3 days, he said, I'll produce this for you. And we joined, forces in a way. And that's how my career started. So yes, network by means of my friend, my very good friend, produced my first film, introduced it to his father's best friend, who was a major producer in Paris. And with his father, all of us got together and started this endeavor. That was the beginning of my career.
Wow.
For the second question, whether to study screenwriting, no, I absolutely think that the experience that I had in life helped me tremendously in making films today. And I think more important than knowing how to write a script is to, you know, develop your personality, develop your interest to learn about the world, be curious, you know, and have that vast experience, which is not necessarily in filmmaking, but rather in, you know, living life and, you know, developing what you have to say, et cetera. And then you can study screenwriting and that will help you create a voice that will tell the stories that you want to tell. But first you need to have stories that you want to tell. That's the most important part.
Well, so this kind of segues into the next question. So how did you learn how to direct and screenwrite?
A lot of it was intuitive, but you know, my first one was a documentary, as I said. In a documentary, it's about, you know, relationship, it's about people, it's about, you know, connecting to people, and a lot of about research. And artistically speaking, I was interested in art since my early childhood. So I was always into painting, sculpture, poetry, you know, all this world, music, of course, and all these elements were always present in my life. So when I had to choose, for example, how I want this documentary to look like, what's the approach, what's the visual approach, the aesthetic approach, you know, how do I make a statement with the camera, it came very naturally to me because of this background in art in general.
Yeah.
So that wasn't an issue. And particularly, I took one course, like a crash course, a 3-day course in screenwriting, which was just like very sort of basic, yet very, very important. So that was a good introduction for me. And also in terms of directing actors, I took two workshops with a in New York City, you know, working with actors, basically, you know, directing scenes and getting the first experience in doing so. And that was also an important experience for me. So these three sort of, I would say, basic and crucial introduction into screenwriting and into directing actors helped me tremendously into, you know, developing my own skills. But it's a lot of experience. It's a lot of doing. And for me, it was intuitive.
Yeah. I've heard that a lot, that doing is like the best way to learn.
Yes.
So can you tell us anything more about getting your first film, Watermarks, produced?
You know, so I told you about that producer, and then he went with it to Arte. And Arte, which is a European network, a sort of art-related network, liked the project and decided to support it. And that's how we went out to start, you know, filming. And what I did was I surrounded myself with top professionals to compensate for my lack of experience. So the director of photography, for example, Tom Horwitz, was at the time a leading, not at the time, still a leading documentary DP that knew the field inside out and was helping me again in being able to express what I wanted to express film-wise. For example, when I, you know, studied the period and researched the period, I realized that many of the early Hollywood directors, of course, came from Vienna, were Viennese and Germans, German Jews. And I thought that creating some kind of a vibe, a feel of Hollywood, like an old Hollywood style, would suit this particular project about old Vienna. So, you know, that's something that I discussed a lot with Tom Horwitz, with the DP. How do we create that? And we, you know, use all sort of tools to establish such aesthetics in the filmmaking. So that's an example, you know. Mm-hmm. So I started myself, and also my sound, the recordist, Tuli Chen, that's his name, an Israeli guy who has tremendous experience. So I surrounded myself, and later also in the editing phase, and all this experience together, you know, helped me also learn and improve my skills.
Yeah.
So that's another thing that I can recommend people who start to do.
Mm-hmm. Do you think a documentary is a good first project to work on as a beginner?
Absolutely. I love that experience. And when I was done, I knew that I could do also, if I wanted, to do feature films. I mean, you don't have to. You can focus on documentaries for the rest of your career, and it's going to be an incredible life.
Yeah.
But in my case, I wanted also to try, you know, into the feature film. That was my next one. And when you make a movie, it doesn't matter what it is. There's a There's a story, there are characters, there's a, you know, plot, the whole craft, you know, the filmmaking. And then at the end, there's a movie that, you know, you know, in our world, it's you press play, you know, way back.
Yeah,
you screened it in the theater and people go through an experience, and that experience is a movie. So it doesn't really matter what feature films ask you to do. I mean, fiction films, not feature, but fiction. It's more about, you know, you create the world in the sense that you need to work with actors to portray, you know, real characters, whether they're real or not. When you write them, they become real to you. So you need to create that world. And then in terms of to create the set, you know, you create a world with the designer, with the art designer, production designer. So, you know, it has different elements, of course, but the storytelling is a storytelling.
Mm-hmm. So your next film was A Late Quartet, which starred Philip Seymour Hoffman, Christopher Walken, and Catherine Keener. So how did you get this project started? And how did you get such large names attached to what was only your second film?
Well, first of all, I was living in New York City at the time. And I love classical music from early childhood. In particular, I like chamber music. And in particular, within chamber music, I like quartet music. So I knew the subject very well. It was very dear to me. And I wrote a script that had to do with, you know, so the story is about a string quartet, and it surrounds one particular quartet, one of the late quartets of Beethoven, called Opus 131. So I created this whole structure of the script around the 7 movement structure of this piece. So there was something about, you know, classical music, the world, relationships, a family, working together for 25 years, and then you have a crisis. There was something about that was, you know, attracted people who were interested in classical music. I'm talking about, you know, in terms of the team, the crew, and also with the actors. So I approached a casting director who was superb, and she helped me introduce the project to these actors. But it was all with an angle. I'll give an example, the late Philip Seymour Hoffman, who is a brilliant, you know, it's hard to say was, because it's so present, a brilliant, brilliant actor. And I saw him in an evening in Carnegie Hall on stage with a string quartet, Takash, and they played pieces that had to do with morbidity, with, you know, the subject, the theme was death, actually, ironically enough. And he read excerpts from a book by Philip Roth, also about death. So I saw how he's moved by the quartet music. I knew that he was related to this music, you know, deep in the heart. So when I approached him, I knew that that would be something that would be interested in exploring. And that's actually what happened in reality. So the script, plus the way it was introduced to him, and then a meeting, and then in that meeting, you know, we really had a great first meeting. And then he watched Watermarks, and he told me that he, you know, was connected to the movie, that he really liked it. He liked the characters. And so we had already a bond, you know, both artistically and personally, and that ignited that. So each person was a different angle, but I'm just saying, like Catherine Keener, for example, her son turned out to be a cellist, you know, into cello. So she's also close to cello, close to classical music, and she loves music. So each one had an angle that had to do with their love of classical music and chamber music in particular. And also it gave them an opportunity to play themselves in New York City, meaning, you know, the way they are in real life, as close as possible. So all these attracted them, and we got together and made the movie.
Yeah. So it's a film about classical music. And like, was this one of your goals, to tell the story of not only classical music, but also the story of these people?
Yeah, no, the goal was to, you know, I started with wanting to tell a story about a family. Mm-hmm. A story about a family that is tied together with bonds, family's bonds. And then how these bonds are being challenged extremely by, in this case, by the illness of one of its members that get Parkinson's and he can't play anymore, but still he wants them to continue to play together because that's his, in a way, you know, that's his life. He dedicated all his life to this quartet, and he wants to make sure that even when he retires, the quartet continues to move on, because, you know, it takes about 20, 25 years, some say decade, one decade, but I think it's longer to create a sound for a string quartet, like a particular sound out of four musicians. Mm-hmm. So he wants that to continue, and but the whole quartet, you know, the other members started to get all the relationships, all the issues that were accumulated over the years started to explode, and they start to, you know, again, it's all being challenged. Also, you know, two of the players are a couple, so there are issues there with their daughter, with the first violinist, and it's all getting, you know, messy.
Mm-hmm. So,
So I wanted to tell that story. Yeah. And the chamber music, the quartet world, was a perfect setting for this story to be told.
Mm-hmm. So 2 years ago, you wrote and directed Incitement. What was it like writing about something so sensitive, like the assassination of Rabin?
It was tough. It was really, really tough. You get very emotional about it. All traumas, you know, they all starts to haunt you.
Yeah.
And also, you know, there's a lot of responsibility, because it's a national drama in Israel, this assassination. And you have to be very, very careful, because if you don't tell it authentically, you know, it's like you mess with an important part of Israel history and how people remember it and how it really was. And so we had to be super, super accurate. And at the same time, you want to treat the character in some like a human being, not like an animal. You know, though he's an assassin, you still want to be able to explore his personality, the reasons, his being, all that stuff, because, you know, that's what we decided to delve into. And when you start to explore that, you don't want to make him too much, you know, you don't want to make him sympathetic.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to really walk the line here. A very, very thin line. It's like walking a minefield. You know, you walk one step here, boom, you have too much association and too much empathy. You walk the other line, it becomes a monster. And monsters are, it's okay to have monsters, but monsters, if we cannot relate to him, then there's nothing to learn from these stories. Just to say, oh, a murderer is a monster, and that's about it. Yeah. So you don't want that, and so on and so forth. The more you show that he was incited, meaning people use incitement on him, and that affected him to do it, the less you take responsibility, so to speak, from him being the assassin. The more you make it out of, oh, this is his own idea, then you put all the blame on him, but then you make him like a loner that had no relationship to what other people said and influenced him, so, which wasn't the case in real life. So as I said, there, it's really a minefield, and that was challenging. But you know, we love these challenges.
So while watching this film, I noticed that you filmed it with a small aspect ratio. Why did you do that?
I did it for a couple of reasons. The first one, really, for me, the most important one was because I make, you know, we tell the story through the point of view of the assassin. And I don't want to glorify him. And I didn't want to make him like a normal hero, because he's not a hero for me. He did a terrible deed. And I'm you know, against it in the most sincere way possible. So I didn't want to give him that feeling of like the anamorphic, you know, sort of the wide screen sort of the typical hero, but rather to close him in that smaller space where he's locked there and he doesn't get that treatment. So that was the first reason, because I had to use, you know, everything I could within the artistic elements that I could in order to affect these emotions towards the story, towards the character. So that was the first one. The second reason was, you know, practical reason, not practical, sorry. The second one was the period piece, because it's about, you know, it's 1995, and this whole event was, you know, the event I'm talking about, the peace process, and then the riots against the peace and the counter riots, and all this world was actually seen through TV. So yeah. The TV set way back, it's not like today when you have, HBO, Netflix, and Amazon, where you see movies in widescreen, even on TV. It used to be these smaller boxes that were 4x3 mm-hmm. or 3x4. And we wanted to, you know, to show that as well, this world of TV, watching TV news type of thing. So to get you into that, that was the second reason, which is also an artistic reason. And the third one was just very technical, because all the footage we used, and I used a lot of archival footage and mixed footage with footage that we filmed, you know, and which was a whole world and reason why to do that. So because it was such a part of the movie, it's much easier when you film in the same dimension of the footage. Mm-hmm. So they go in and out, you know, very easily, smoothly, and you sometimes cannot actually, you know, feel the difference in a way. So you feel that you're in the same situation, whether you're in the archival or in the footage we filmed. So that's the third reason. So that was like too many reasons, and I used it.
Yeah, it makes sense. So after Incitement, you wrote and directed Valley of Tears. So what made you interested in this topic of the Yom Kippur War?
Well, Yom Kippur War, again, just like the assassination of Rabin, Yom Kippur War is arguably one of the two major traumas in Israel history. So when you have such a national trauma, as a filmmaker, I'm inclined to tell these stories, you know, to delve into them, explore them, and have this discussion. On a personal level, I was 7 years old when this war broke out. And it affected me. You know, my stepfather went immediately already to the Air Force. And it took him like almost 6 months, you know, before he came back.
Wow.
Without like a visit here and there, you know, it was just like going. He was flying in a Hercules, which is, you know, sort of a large plane, moving personnel and parachuters and all sort of equipment and stuff back and forth from the center towards the Sinai. And so you know, that was one thing. The second is that my mother and all her friends, you know, the wives of pilots that were fighting, were sitting together, and it was really scary. You know, I remember that there was a real danger of Israel being occupied, you know?
Yeah.
And so I remember that, and also my mother, and everybody was scared. And then names of pilots that were, you know, that got hit and died, you know? So now we had all this situation, very, very sad. A situation, and you as a kid, you know, like 7 year old, you are in the midst of it.
Yeah.
So that was also, a major part of it. So it's also a personal trauma, childhood trauma, that I wanted to tell. And also in Israel, you know, you have like hundreds of thousands of people that are affected by this war, that live this trauma until today. Mm-hmm. But it was important to also discover that. Once I started to work on it, then a new world opened, which was the world of post-trauma, which now suddenly was related to all Israeli wars. And in a way, the existence of being an Israeli has a lot to do with everybody being somewhat post-traumatic from war and terror. Yeah. So suddenly it elevated that theme to a new level, where I realized that for me, that's the center of this story.
So I feel like you are a strong believer in writing about what you know.
Yes, it's true, but I don't have to know before I start. I need to have passion towards the story and find an angle that I find to be very important for me personally. And then I do this research. You know, I meet every person that can help me understand the subject matter or were there or related to, etc. Mm-hmm. And so that's the approach.
Yeah. So, what did you learn while making a Valley of Tears? Like, what's different between writing a movie and writing a TV show?
I'll tell you, because I would say today, the approach is such, at least the way my approach to the show was more or less the same as making a movie. It's just a series of 10 movies. And the only difference is that you need to chop them, chop the stories, because they're not 2 hours long, with the exception of the first episode that were like a double episode. And the last one also is a double, which, that's how it was screened in Israel. And that's how I edited it. It's like an hour and 20 minutes experience. So with the exception of the first two and last two, which were actually feature films, the idea is that, you have a little bit different structure. The structure is different because you don't end, there's the arc is different, especially the end. You cannot close the tail. You always leave the tail open until the very end. So in that respect, yes, it's different in the writing a little bit, but in the making itself, I approach it exactly the way I would have approached a feature film, exactly the same.
Yeah. So I understand that you're based in New York City and in Israel. My other guests have said that it's easiest to pursue a film career while inside the USA, and more specifically inside LA. So what did you do to succeed in New York and in Israel?
Wow. It's hard for me to answer this question. When you live somewhere, you tell the stories that interest you in that particular place, and you find the people that you like to work with and that they appreciate your work, and you find your way to make them. So, it's... It's hard for me to answer more than saying that.
Yeah, well, that's fine. Yeah. So now, just for a quick craft question.
Yes.
When you did your three lesson screenwriting course, what was the biggest thing that you learned to improve your writing?
Wow. As I said, it was basic and I knew very little. So everything I learned there was very important for me at the time. Today, it's basic. Mm-hmm. But back then, since I did not know anything, basic was very, very important. But I would say what I can remember that, out of so many things, what I remembered that went very strong when I write a script, is that you want the forces of antagonism to be eventually as strong as possible, so that your lead character that goes out to the world trying to solve what started with at the beginning, the inciting incident of any story, you want the forces that work against your lead character or characters, if it's an ensemble, to be as strong as possible, and to reach eventually a point where it's like asking yourself, what would be the most challenging thing my character could face? And you just want to be there. Now, as I said, this is something that when you write a script, you get there anyway. But that's something that I, really struck with me, that your character is as strong as, the forces that act against him
or her. And then what's your final tip for young screenwriters to improve their work?
It depends on what stage in the making, but if we'll talk about screenwriting, because that's like the first step, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you research and you learn your world. And I would say two things. I'd say that the first one is to take your time in exploring your story as deep and as wide as you can. Mm-hmm. Meaning, don't take a route that you think your character will take. Take many possible routes that your character can take. And then while going with them and imagining them and writing them, then you have to sort of realize it. Usually it tells you which direction is the one to take. So in that respect, I would say just explore your story as much as possible. And but while exploring all the possible routes, figure out what's the best for you to tell your story, the story that you want to tell. So that would be for me an advice, not to lack on a way and not to continue doing the one thing that you do, but rather a lot of exploration, open your mind, open your imagination, open the possibilities and explore. Mm-hmm. Until it's going to reveal itself. That's one thing that I think is important. And yeah, keep on rewriting and keep on improving it, because you write something and the day after you realize that maybe it doesn't say what you want to say. And 2 days later, it feels completely different. And then, you go to other people and you read the script or you tell them the story and they have complete different interpretation. And you learn from that as well, how they perceive what you think. You know, you want to say something and then you write it and then you don't realize, because it's you don't realize that what you're trying to say doesn't come across at all. So these are things to explore when you communicate your work to other people. So I also think that you need to communicate to people that you trust, people who will not let you down or will not put you down or will not depress you, but rather give you good comments, constructive comments, and help you elevate your work as if you're looking at the mirror or something. But you get the vibe, even if you don't hear any note, you read it to somebody and you already, by reading it, you feel the vibe. You feel there's something that is already happening there. And with that, you can learn a lot and go back to your work and improve it. So these are two things that I recommend.
So thank you for that, Yaron. Thank you for coming on.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me, Liam. And good luck with everything.
Thank you. Thank you for coming, Yaron. If anyone wants to know more about Yaron and his work, check out his Wikipedia page. And if you're interested, check out Valley of Tears, which is streaming on HBO Max. Thank you for listening to the Student Screenwriting Podcast.